the Off the Ball Podcast Network. Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now then, we're joined by Brian O'Driscoll. You're there?
I am, Joe. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. So as if things weren't bad enough, there's a typhoon coming our way. What else is going to happen in this World Cup for Ireland?
I saw that. Nil all. Take the draw points. We qualify on the basis of that, do we?
No, we're in massive trouble.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Seems it's, I mean, it's very unlikely by all accounts. Andy Farrell was talking today. He said that World Rugby had been in touch and there is a contingency plan, which might actually include moving the game to an undisclosed location. They'll decide on Thursday. So okay. It'll either happen where it's meant to happen or it'll happen up the road, but it should happen either way. Worst case scenario would be a postponement and it would be a nil-all draw, in which case, well, I don't know what. Can you criticise the team for a nil-all draw and an elimination in the tournament?
Oh, we'll have a go. We'll have a go. And I believe it's meant to be the worst typhoon of their season as well. It's typical, isn't it? Yeah, listen, you've got to have a contingency for a situation like that. You can't have a nil-all draw and someone lose out on, you know, World Cup quarterfinal qualification on the basis of bad weather.
Yeah. I wouldn't have thought so. It would be a disaster for the tournament. So we'll see how that plays out. Fans are being encouraged still to go to the original destination, and there will be a decision made on Thursday if people are wondering. The Russian game is 4 days ago now, so it's well and truly out of the system and feels like a bit of a distant memory. But just to get your thoughts briefly on it, there were 18 handling errors. There were 20 minutes against 14 men. No bonus point until the hour mark. A reasonable first half hour, I suppose,
in broad terms. You know, watching it a second time, the first half hour, I was a lot more enamoured by it than I had been on the first watch. We're always going to have, you have to remember, teams fight for their lives at Rugby World Cup. It's the showpiece for them to, you know, to express themselves. A team like Russia shouldn't have been in the World Cup on the basis of, you know, the disqualification or the removal of Belgium, Romania, and Spain. So all of a sudden they're a very proud nation. I think you've heard it in the post-match interviews that they were going to give everything on the pitch for 80 minutes. And you know, when you're down there, irrespective of what your form has been like before the tournament, you find another gear, irrespective of what side you are in a Rugby World Cup. And they managed to do that. Huge credit to them. They did the rugby equivalent of park the bus. They just made it very, very difficult defensively. They didn't really do a huge amount in attack. They constantly kicked to us, and they won a lot of the kick tennis, even if they didn't kick particularly effectively. And they just made it very difficult for us to grind them down. So I thought the realization of what sort of game it was going to be after half an hour, we dug in well for that period of time. I think the really frustrating part will be the number of handling errors and the lack of intensity and fluidity in the second half. And we've talked about this team needing a bit of momentum to carry them forward into what will hopefully be a quarter final, albeit the Samoans will have something to say about that. But it's very hard to go from 35 or 40% to 85, 90%, you know, in a game or in two games. You need to make that sort of progression. And it was a big roadblock or a big speed bump against Japan, and we need to get back to that, you know, those risen confidence levels. And I don't know if that second half performance against Russia did what it was meant to do, and as a result we're still kind of a bit stuttery, a bit unsure of ourselves, and now we have to find our performance in the Samoan game to produce that.
It's overly simple, I'm sure, to say, well, Johnny Sexton went off and things slowed down a little bit, but that must be part of it. What jumped out at you in that 20-25 minute period from end of the first half to the 68 minute when Ireland didn't score?
The timing of our runs, and credit, some credit will go to Russia with, you know, the impacts and how they targeted us. And I think a lot of teams have worked out how to defend us with, you know, multiple numbers into the contact zone. We're not the biggest team in the competition, so, you know, our agility and our footwork on the gain line is massively important. And if we get into wrestling matches and you know, that brutality against the bigger teams, we'll get knocked back. So I just don't think we were very smart with timing our runs. You can never be too late for a run, but you can be far too early. You can always make up the gap of being, you know, of accelerating into a hole or for a ball to be left up in the air for a player to power onto it. But because we were getting knocked behind the advantage line, the knock-on effect was we were getting our arcing runs thereafter, particularly the forwards, mistimed, and they were the ruck ball was slow and a bit messy, and as a result, players were kind of very keen to get their hands on it, but as a result, they were kind of stuttering, and there's no momentum gain from that. You look at that conversely to the first few plays and the Rob Kearney try, the brilliant carry from Tadhg Byrne, even though he got absolutely melted on the advance line, you watch the depth that he took that from and the power he took it from, and the collision was won by, it was a neutral hit, but the knock-on effect to where the defenders are able to come in and slow the ruck ball down is completely negated. And as a result, Ireland were able to produce slick ruck ball and fast and do exactly as they wanted to in attack. Whereas the second half, everything was like standing starts, impossible to generate any momentum from that. And then when you've got as many unforced errors and spilled balls on top of that, it just copper fastens what you feel is that we can't get any momentum from this game, and it grew hugely frustrating.
That's very interesting. That explains a lot, because I was going to ask you why, on an individual basis, if you look at the likes of Rob Kearney, who's scoring tries and making a few breaks, you look at Keith Earls, we saw his speed at the end of the Japan game, has been in good form, really good form for 2-3 years plus now. Andrew Conway looks sharp. Ringrose is making breaks and looks very sharp. Sexton, when he's playing, is looking good. And, you know, Stockdale, I guess, is always liable to come in with a try. I don't know if his form is quite as good. But individually, they all look okay. You know, you would think, geez, there's a bit of form there. So that may be what you've just explained, probably explains why they're not quite humming as a unit.
Timing is everything. It really is. And particularly on those power plays of the deception of those that in particular aren't getting the ball, and you'll see it in a small capacity. If you look back on the Rob Kearney try, where Bundy Aki is the one that's outside Jordy Murphy, and you know he's hands up and showing as if he's got an interest in getting the ball, or he's going to be getting it. And what that does, it holds those outside defenders and it commits them to not being able to keep one eye on what's going on the inside. And it means that in scramble defense, that might be the difference between, you know, hundredths of a second of a player thinking, I've got to give full credit to Aki coming here at me and focus on him completely, versus being able to turn on their heels and chase back and maybe scrag Rob Kearney down. So those small aspects are everything to the detail of Joe Schmidt's teams. And when you're a little bit off, it has a massively negative knock-on effect. And games, we hear the phrase, games are won by the forwards and backs decide by how much. And that's absolutely true to form. Forwards set the platform. It is so hard for a back line, irrespective of individually how well they are playing, so hard for them to win a game if you don't get front football, if you don't get advantage line and gain line. And I talk so often about how it's a simple game. It really is a collision-winning game, and that's where your best players will come into their own, where they just have defences slightly on their heels. Mm.
And if there has been a common theme across 2019, that's been an issue. So this team now goes out not quite knowing, maybe with the same certainty or confidence they had in 2018, not quite knowing if they're going to win those collisions and not quite sure where the chips are going to fall.
Yeah, they don't. And it's not going to get any easier in the next two games, irrespective of who our opposition is. We definitely know it's Samoa. And if we do get to a quarterfinal, you're guaranteed two of the most physical teams in the world. You know, interesting reading the Irish Times today and seeing the quotes from Conor O'Shea talking about that South African team being one of the biggest teams he's ever seen on a rugby field. So you know that you're only going to get one type of game against them, and it's not only the 15, it's how they unload their bench, and they seem to be even bigger players than those that started. So it's going to be a ferociously physical game if the semi-final is South Africa. But first and foremost, you know, maybe we haven't given the credit to the teams within our pool, and we became unstuck against Japan. I think we've got to give a huge amount of focus and credit to Samoa. They you know, arguably definitely should have held off on not conceding a bonus point try to Japan. They could have done so against Scotland. So we're certainly guaranteed nothing. And they've got this freebie. They have the opportunity to go out and put in a performance that they feel is warranted at this World Cup. And if they can get into Ireland early on and build a bit of confidence and maybe shrink Ireland a little bit, you know, it's hard to argue with them. Like, the whole world doesn't feel as though it's a foregone conclusion. Maybe in Ireland we think we should get 4 or 5 points here, but the whole world is thinking there's potential for another upset there. So maybe we need to realise the challenge at hand and you know, talk in the immediate rather than what might be down the track.
Yeah, because actually Andy Farrell was out doing media today and he was asked about resting players in this game and he said that is definitely not an option. It seems Sexton will play about an hour. It seems Carberry will play the closing 20 minutes or so. Farrell said of Carberry that he's flying, he's in a great place, it's the best place I've seen him over the last few weeks. He was running around with a proper spring in his step, in great spirits, ready to go. And it seems Robbie Henshaw is going to play some part as well. So that's all relatively positive news. The Henshaw thing now looks increasingly like they knew he was going to, you know, not really be available in the group stages, and that was just worth the gamble. Will he make that big a difference when he comes back? What does he offer?
Yeah, there's a real confidence. If you think about Irish performances over the last few years as well, when Robbie's been involved, you know, he irrespective of his centre partners, save for maybe one performance here or there, you know, the English game obviously springs to mind with him playing out of position at full back. But you know, Robbie has been a very, very important player within that team. I think he brings this huge energy. He's got a phenomenal engine on him, but I think he matches a physicality with some really nice subtle skills as well. And I think arguably, he's our best defender on the park. He rarely misses tackles, reads things very well, is a very generous defender with his workload of wanting to try and push his centre on, or you know, if he's playing at 13, pushing his winger on and working and hunting for them on the inside. So he's very much a team player. He's a guy that you'd love to have it beside you in the trenches, and particularly when it comes to the centres splitting, you know, after the first phase, he'll gladly do his workload of getting up and running to the far side, you know, which is a 30, 40, 50 metre sprint to get out to the edges as well. I always love with players like that were very generous. Gordon Darcy was very generous at doing that, where you try and share that workload, but he's someone that has such a phenomenal engine that he thrives on that. And they're small things, but getting the best defenders in the positions where you have to make the reads.
And say it was South Africa, which is the most likely scenario at this point. Is it a horses for courses selection whereby, okay, Henshaw's in because he's got the physicality and you've mentioned his defensive abilities. Is it then, well, sorry, Gary Ringrose, even though you're in great form, we need the heft to Bundiaki, or how will that play out, do you suspect?
I don't know. It's hard to go and foresee what's going to happen in a couple of weeks' time in that regard. I think it would be very harsh at the moment because Gary didn't have great form coming into the World Cup. And in a stuttering team, he's proven himself to be a world-class operator. I think it would be very tough on him. You still need some creativity against teams like South Africa. You're not going to bludgeon them to death. We'll lose that battle if we take them on in their game. We've got to be able to think our way around it. I think you need the players that have the capability and the footwork and the skill in the nous to be able to put that sort of game plan into effect. And for me, that's why you have to have your X-factor players. That's where Keith Earls is vitally important. That's where Gary Ringrose is vitally important to this team. So for me, you don't match what you think your opposition are throwing at you. You put your team out that you feel will cause them major problems. And I think Gary Ringrose is definitely a part of that.
Okay. I do want to talk to you about the broader weekend that was as well. Just a final word on Samoa. That game's just going to be physical, tough. Ireland don't necessarily need a bonus point, but they sort of really could do it one to feel much better coming off the field, that's for sure. But is it wrong to say I presume they'll get one?
No, it's on the basis of Japan struggling to get one, we lost to Japan, Scotland struggled to get one. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that you're going to get a bonus point. I think it'll be, again, a super physical test match. You look at the gap between the games that Samoa have. It's a 7-day turnaround. I don't know how many of them they'll have had over the course of the World Cups that they've been involved in. Those Tier 2 nations tend to get a bit of a raw deal with that. So they'll be best primed. They feel a little bit hard done by World Rugby with some of the the decisions, particularly the decisions in the Russian game, where some of their players got suspended. So I think all of that is starting to build, on the ledger in the positives versus negatives, and they feel as though that they have a huge performance in them, and that's a very dangerous beast where they've nothing to lose in their final game, and they've seen another Tier 2 nation taking the scalp already. Well, why shouldn't they do it too?
We're talking about Brian O'Driscoll. Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. Over the weekend, South Africa put 49 points on Italy. England beat Argentina 39-10. New Zealand 71 points to Namibia's 9. And France, a late scare to Tonga, 23 points to 21. Everybody still has this really as New Zealand favourites, or certainly the bookies do. New Zealand fairly firm favourites with South Africa behind them. And then England, Wales is how we're seeing it. Can you take much from New Zealand whacking another team?
You can take a lot from their second half performance, how they probably got told off by Steve Hansen at the interval, and they came out and absolutely annihilated Namibia, scored some fantastic tries. On the flip side, it's another game for the All Blacks that has very little meaning because they're not battle-hardened, but at the same time, they'll feel as though their powder is nice and dry for whatever quarterfinal they get, and they'll anticipate having England in a semi-final, and that'll be their big one.
And where are England? So they beat Argentina, as we said, 14-man Argentina from 17 minutes in, the red card against Lavanini. That was absolutely a red card, I presume, in your eye and everyone
sure
else's
eye. It was. Like, he's got an appalling disciplinary record, I think. I read something that he was one yellow card away from being the most sin-binned Argentinian of all time. I think he now has the record for most ill-discipline at Rugby World Cups. But as soon as he threw the shot, and people are talking about the irony of Owen Farrell getting behind the receiving end of two red cards. He certainly takes those collisions very well. Geez, that was a high, high, hard shot from a big, big man, and they're the sort of tackles that we're trying to outlaw. So yeah. I don't think there's anybody in the world could have imagined, any rugby fan that could have thought, you know what, would have been good to have seen a yellow card. That's a red card in the olden days.
Yeah. I saw Brian Moore was writing about England, and he was saying they're not quite clicking and it looks a bit fractured. And where are you in England?
I think George Ford is playing great. I think he's through the misfortune of Slade's injury and through necessity of having to play, not being sure about the combination in the centre. Also, Jonathan Joseph picked up an injury in the warm-up games that didn't allow him some game time, which maybe could have put a different shape on that three-quarter line. But I think the go-to 10 and centre combination is the one that we've seen in Ford, Farrell and Tuilagi. Ford looks as though he's playing with a lot of time. He's always seen it very well. It's just a matter on the bigger games whether he's been able to deliver it. He's a brave defender, albeit not that effective a one. He'll try and make his tackles. He doesn't shirk his responsibilities. Very good kicker from hand. Reads the game well. It's to have that second set of hands outside him in Owen Farrell, mixing who's first and second distributor. I like the look of it. I've been skeptical about that three-quarter line before, but I have to say, on current form and the way things are being run, I would be surprised if they change things up, because you can see that Ford is playing with a huge amount of confidence at the moment. Even that first Johnny May try, the small little things of identifying a one-on-one with the hooker, or sorry, a two-on-two But his, you know, he just had to get to the outside of the hooker and interest Erda Brigetta, who was marking Johnny May on the wing. And as soon as he saw the shoulders turned, he didn't have to hold it for another second and fully commit him. He knew he had him, threw it to May, and a beautiful pass. They'll, people think they're easy plays. They're small little nuances of a game when you realise someone's really on top form. And he's fantastic acceleration himself. We saw him score against USA, you know, and I spotted a gap, you know, between the third and fourth defenders, and bang, he was gone through it. So when you're that much of a threat yourself, and you've a lovely passing game, and you've got a good kicking game, gosh, that seems like a pretty good combination to have. When you've got, you know, the bludgeon of Tuilagi and the skill levels of Owen Farrell outside you too.
Yeah, they play France at the weekend to decide who tops the pool. Not to round this off by navel gazing again, but when you do see England, you know, going wide with ease and other teams going wide with ease, you do kind of really notice Ireland's narrowness, actually. It kind of almost copper fastens the sense when you're watching all these games back to back.
I have to say, I must agree with the two lads. I love their shape. It feels as though they're not prescriptive, that their shape allows them to see, to play what's in front of them, and depending on what calls come out the back. And I think when you've got really good ball players like Kyle Sinclair and Cruz and Itoje, you know, and the Vunipolas, I think you've got guys that can obviously carry and get you advantage line, but can play this, you know, the silky parts to pulling the ball out the back to Ford or Farrell, who can then, you know, hit the next pod or throw it out the back of that pod, and that's where they get width to width. Yeah. And I think their shape looks really, really good. And they will test any team. And I, the thing I like about England is they haven't played brilliantly so far this tournament. It feels as though there's another gear or two in them.
Yeah.
And I don't think they'll need it for France. I think, yeah, you know, France can hurt teams, but I think over the course of 80 minutes, I fancy they'll have too much for them.
And very last one, you'd probably notice those subtleties with Ireland. When you look at, you know, freeze frame us at certain points and look at our shape, do we look like a team that could go wide that are giving a complicated picture to the opposition, or is it all geared up to...
It doesn't feel as though, you know, where other teams look as though they have three options, it feels as though if you're a betting man that you could guess which one was going to be taken. Yeah. And so if I'm able to guess it from the TV, I would imagine defensive systems that have analysed the team and analysed their shape and seen the personnel have a fair idea what option they're going to go for as well. And I'd be a bit worried that we, you know, the teams that put huge pressure from the outside as well, and England do it and South Africa do it, and Wales do it, where we don't give ourselves a chance, even from a depth perspective, we don't give ourselves a chance to actually get out there. Even if we pull it back to the 10 from the first pod, the depth of our strike runners on the second phase is still too flat,
right,
where wingers or centres can read through and slam the gate shut. So I don't see, we're not doing it as well as other teams. We're not doing it as well as England. We're not doing it as well as New Zealand. But that doesn't mean that, you know, we need to get that stuff perfect for whatever quarterfinal we might get. If we get there, we're talking about, you know, yes, all bets are off, because you just then have to have one of the biggest performances you've had over the Joe Schmidt tenure, and then you might qualify.
Okay. Great stuff. Thanks very much.
Cheers. Good to chat.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.